Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlanka again with another episode of Sri Aurobindo's essays, Divine and Human. We in India admit the Guru and accept the avatar. But still, the Guru is only a vessel of the infinite knowledge. The avatar is only a particular manifestation of the divine personality. It is shocking to our spiritual notions to find cosmic demiurges of a vague, semi-divine character put between us and the all-powerful and all-loving and Kutumi and Maurya taking the place of God. One sees, finally, a new theocracy claiming the place of the old. And that theocracy is dominantly European. Indians figure numerously as prominent subordinates. Just as in the British system of government, Indians are indispensable, and sometimes valued assistants. Or they obtain eminence on the side of pure spirituality and knowledge, just as Indians could rise to the highest places in the judicial service or in advisory post, but not in the executive administration. But if the smaller hierophants are sometimes and rarely Indians, the theocrats and the bulk of the prophets are Russian, American, or English. An Indian here and there may quicken the illumination of the theosophist, but it is Madame Blavatsky or Mrs. Besant, Sinnett or Ledbetter, who lays down the commandments and the law. It is strange to see the present political condition of India reproducing itself in a spiritual organization. It illustrates, perhaps, the subtle interconnection and interdependence of all individual and communal activities in the human being. But the political subordination finds its justification in the physical fact of the British rule. It is argued plausibly, and perhaps correctly, that without this subordination, British supremacy could have no sure foundation. But where is the justification for the foreign spiritual control? The argument of native incapacity may be alleged, but I do not find this hypothesis of superiority supported by the facts. I do not see that Mrs. Besant has a more powerful and perfect intellectuality, eloquence, personality, or religious force than had Swami Vivekananda, or that a single theosophist has yet shown him or herself to be as mighty and pure a spirit as the Paramhansa Ramakrishna. There are Indian yogins who have a finer and more accurate psychical knowledge than the best can be found in the books of the theosophist. Some, even of the less advanced, have given me proofs of far better developed occult powers than any theosophist I have yet known. The only member of the Theosophical Society who could give me any spiritual help, I could not better by my unaided faculties, was one excluded from the esoteric section, because his rare and potent experiences were unintelligible to the theosophic guides. Nor were his knowledge and powers gained by theosophic methods, but by following the path of our yoga and the impulse of an Indian guru, one who meddled not in organizations and election cabals, but lived like a madman, unmatabat. These peculiarities of the theosophical movement have begun to tell, and the better mind of India revolts against theosophy. The young who are the future are not for the new doctrine. Yet only through India can Theosophy hope to survive. It may attract a certain number of European adherents, but cannot hope to control the thought and life of the West. Its secretive and papal tendency is a fatal bar. Europe has done definitely with all knowledge that will not submit itself to scrutiny. It is finishing with the usurpations of theocracy in things spiritual as it has finished with them in things temporal. Or even devout Catholics writhe uneasily under the shower of papal encyclicals and feel what an embarrassment it is to have modern knowledge forbidden by a revenant from the Middle Ages, or opinion fixed by a council of priests no more spiritual, wise, or illustrious than the minds they coerce with their irrational authority. Europe is certainly not going to exchange a Catholic for a theosophical pope. The councils of cardinals for the esoteric section, or the gospel and the Athanasian creed for ancient wisdom and Isis unveiled. Will India long keep the temper that submits to unexamined authority and blinds itself with a name? I believe not. We shall more and more return to the habit of going to the root of things, of seeking knowledge not from outside, but from the self who knows and reveals. We must more and more begin to feel that to believe a thing, because somebody has heard from somebody else that Mrs. Besant heard it from a Mahatma, is a little unsafe and indefinite. Even if the assurance is given direct, we shall learn to ask for the proofs. Even if Kutumi himself comes and tells me, I shall certainly respect his statement, but also I shall judge it and seek its verification. The greatest Mahatma is only a servant of the Most High, and I must see his japras before I admit his plenary authority. The world is putting off its blinkers. It is feeling once more the divine impulse to see. Now, it is not that Theosophy is false. It is that Theosophists are weak and human. I'm glad to believe that there is much truth in Theosophy. There are also considerable errors. Many of the things they say which seem strange and incredible to those who decline the experiment agree with the general experience of yogins. There are other statements which our experience appears to contradict or to which it gives a different interpretation. Mahatmas exist, but they are not omnipotent or infallible. Rebirth is a fact, and the memory of our past lives is possible. But the rigid rules of time and of karmic reaction laid down dogmatically by the Theosophist Hierophants are certainly erroneous. Especially is the hotpotch of Hindu and Buddhist mythology and theosophic prediction served up to us by Mrs. Besant, confusing, misleading. At any rate, it does not agree with the insight of much greater yogins than herself. Like most theosophists, she seems to ignore the numerous sources and possibilities of error which assail the yogin before his intellect is perfectly purified, and he has his perfection in the higher and super intellectual faculties of the mind. Until then, the best have to remember that the mind, even of the fairly advanced, is not yet divine, and that it is the nature of the old, unchastened human element to leap at misunderstandings, follow the lure of predilections, and take premature conclusions for established truths. We must accept the Theosophists as inquirers, as hierophants, and theocrats. I think we must reject them. If Theosophy is to survive, it must first change itself. It must learn that mental rectitude, to which it is now a stranger, and improve its moral basis. It must become clear, straightforward, rigidly self-searching, skeptical in the nobler sense of the word. It must keep the Mahatmas in the background and put God and truth in the front. Its popes must dethrone themselves and enthrone the intellectual conscience of mankind. If they wish to be mystic and secret like our yogins, then they must, like our yogins, assert only to the initiate and the train. But if they come out into the world to proclaim their mystic truths aloud and seek power, credit, and influence on the strength of their assertions, then they must prove. It need not and ought not to be suddenly or by miracles. There must be a scientific development. We must be able to lay hold on the rationale and watch the process of the truths they proclaim. We will stop at this point for today. Thank you for listening. May you always allow the light of inquiry before accepting anything from anyone. We hope to see you, or we hope that you will hear us again next week. Marlenka signing off.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.